Okay, I'm Sarah Reith with KZYX. We are at the Matheson Center for Performing Arts in Mendocino. Can you introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Howard Garrett. I am board president, co-founder of Orca Network, a nonprofit based in Washington State on Whidbey Island.
And can you talk about the connection between here and there in terms of orcas?
Well, the orcas that we study mainly and have for over 40 years are known as the Southern Resident Community, and they are an intact, cohesive community. No association, no interbreeding with any other orca families around. An extended family, they currently number only 73. But some of them, they're different families within the family. It's an extended family, so different matrilines within that big family like to come to California now and then when they're looking for more salmon. That's pretty much their eternal quest, is to find enough salmon. And they follow the Sacramento River System bound Chinook salmon from the North Pacific that come down the coast along the shelf, and they seem to stage and kind of circulate around Monterey, California, in Monterey Bay or nearby, before they head upriver. So that makes them a primary sort of foraging ground for the southern resident orcas, so they come right past Northern California when they do. That's the connection between those whales and right here.
And you were talking about how they have these cultural differences that even extend to a linguistic difference. Can you talk a little bit about the different calls that the whales make and why you don't hesitate to call it a language?
Right. Well, this was first described for science in the early 1980s, and it has been developed ever since. But the pattern was pretty clear by the mid-1980s that there were completely separate and distinct communities, or extended families, or you may say tribes, of orcas that exist and live side by side, really. I mean, they don't associate, they don't travel together, but they cross paths. They sometimes are within a few miles of each other, but they seem to have an avoidance pattern so that they don't have any similarities in their behaviors at all. And that applies to their diet. The entirety of their diet is totally separate, and to their communications, to their ability, their use of calls, of very distinct, very much repeated, called stereotyped calls that are all documented, annotated, and are completely separate. They can only be used for communication, and they can only be some kind of symbolic communication, as in languages. Those calls mean something. We have no idea what any of them mean, but they must mean something that is distinct for each family, developed over hundreds of thousands of years. Of course, we don't have recordings from 100,000 years ago, but every other part of their behavior has been distinct for at least that time. And we know that really from the genetics and from the complete and utter avoidance of each other, of the different groups now. So when you put it all together, they are interacting using symbols. That's pretty much the definition of a language. So I would say they are using their learned language to communicate with each other. And that, what can that be but language?
And there's another way that they have of communicating with each other and possibly with us, or just conveying something like grief. You touched on the famous tour of grief by the mother whale who lost her baby and carried the corpse around with her for weeks. Is that something that they have done before the oceans got to be in such peril?
This has never been seen before. It was unprecedented from the second day. that they would carry their deceased infant around like that. And first, you know, you have to preface that by they show interest in humans. I mean, they're basically busy with their lives, so it's not often, but they do sometimes come around to a boat and roll over on their sides and take a look at you, kind of scan the audience, more or less, you know, the people lined up at the rail that are fascinated and want to see them. And they know, they recognize certain boats, certainly the sound of the boats and the people on them that they see time after time. So they have a sort of a relationship, you know, with certainly certain humans, but with humans in general. They're very aware when humans are paying attention to them. So the question was she J35 Talequa was her name, is her name, she still lives, was she conveying her sense of grief to the humans? Because she carried her calf, her dead calf, right within sight, right along the populated areas, right beside the boats that were watching her very closely. You know, you can't tell her intention, you can't interpret exactly what it was, so it can't be proven that that's what she was doing. But increasingly, every day for 17 days while she carried her calf, the speculation, the feeling from the observers and from the worldwide media, really, that were watching this indirectly through the media, was that she was telling us something. She was saying, look what you've done. Look what has happened to my baby and to so many babies and to my whole family, that we have to suffer through these losses one after another. Do something. Change your ways so that this doesn't keep happening to us. There's certainly an association between civilization, population, and their declines in number. So I think they can see that we have something to do with their losses.
And during the first panel discussion this morning, when everybody was asked what needs to happen to save the oceans, because it seemed like, you know, we saw a lot of disturbing things. We saw pictures of the mother carrying her baby. We saw pictures of mice eating an albatross chick. And we saw endless maps and graphs of the ocean warming and populations shifting and vanishing. And you said that what's needed is a worldwide spiritual shift. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, what I'm feeling is that we need a sort of spiritual renewal, a reawakening of our sense of relationship, of our family connections with life on this planet. And I think an indigenous people sort of perspective that I have learned from is to consider that the animals are our family, that they are animal people. They are like people. We need to treat them like people and respect them like people. And not just the animals, but the plants as well. These mighty, magnificent trees around us. They are wonders, and they give us life. They are part of the life that we need just as much as we need our mothers, our fathers, our siblings, our young. We need our animals, we need our trees, we need to treat them accordingly. They are our family, and that is how we should act.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you. I really appreciate your interest and the time.